Tuesday, May 15th, and it's great to see everybody here. We'll have a great time. We're going to open at the beginning a public hearing, and hopefully we'll get our people here so we can work these. We have people coming and going quickly, and some of them watching because we have other committees going on at the same time. So with that, we're going to open a public hearing on SCR4, Representative Fire, and first we'll let our administrator give a short explanation of the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Byer.
Senator Byer, I get that right. Representative Boquist, SCR 4 recognizes former Senator Bob Kintai for his award as 2006 National Outstanding Tree Farmer of the Year and for his service to Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and member of the committee.
Yeah,
I am Roger Byer, State Senator.
I'm a yes vote, just in case you wanted to know.
I won't take much of your time. Thank you for hearing this resolution. As you just heard, this resolution is to honor former Senator Kintai for his award of Outstanding Tree Farmer of the Year. The resolution lays out many of the things that Bob has done for the state and on behalf of forest land in Oregon. And the one of the most amazing things I will point out is to this day, Senator Kintai is still the only forester ever to have served in the Oregon State Senator. In the Oregon State Senate, that's quite an amazing thing. If you think of this state and the history of the timber industry to this state, the fact that there's only been one certified trained forester ever serve in the Senate is an amazing thing. Also like to point out for your information, in case you didn't already know it, you also have a former winner of the National Outstanding Tree Farmer of the Year winner in your House. Representative Krieger is also a former member of this prestigious award. The state also has at least one other that I'm aware of, Mr. Bert Udell from the Lebanon area, is also a former winner of this award. So, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, if not, I will retreat to my committee and encourage you to pass this bill forward so we can present it to Bob and his wife while they're still able to enjoy it.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just one comment, Mr. Chair. I'll be sure to tell the other committee members the 10-minute speech he gave on behalf.
Yeah, well, and that they were missing. I agree. I'll work on my group too on that same thing. So, thank you very much, Senator Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So next we have Dan Pastrell and Christine McNitt. Now we're over in another committee.
Go ahead.
You just missed a wonderful speech by Senator Byer.
Yeah.
Oh, no. 10 minutes.
I'll go listen to it on the internet.
It's a yes vote.
The internet. Series of tubes.
Joe Roblin, members of the committee. Dan Pastrell, I'm the Public Affairs Director with the Oregon Department of Forestry, and we appreciate the opportunity to come and speak in support of SCR4 and to just acknowledge the many contributions and the great leadership and hard work of Senator Bob Kintai over the years, his recent award also. He and his wife bought, essentially cut over land in the mid-50s and built, a sustainable forest and an active business that's kind of a demonstration of what it is that forests are all about or can be all about in Oregon. And I would just add that one thing in particular that I appreciate about Bob is his willingness to have tours and have people come out there and visit. We've noticed, we can crank out all the brochures and written material in the world, but when we're able to get people out into a forest and show them stuff and have them talk to the people who manage it and explain what they're doing and why, we see people sort of have aha moments. And I trust, I imagine that happened more than a few times through Bob Kintai's work, and we appreciate that and urge passage of this resolution.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm Christina McNitt, representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and Bob Kintai is a very special member of ours. I think he probably founded the Oregon Small Woodlands Association 200 years ago or something. But he not only is an outstanding tree farmer by the awards that he has received over his career, but he also reinvests in the next generation, which I think is really typical of tree farmers. They grow things for the long term and nurture them and care for them, and that includes his service to the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, his service to this body as a senator, his service working with other woodland managers through different programs at Oregon State University. And I regret that he's not here to talk to you about rhododendrons, because he could share quite a bit with this committee about that as well. But he's a unique individual. He's invested a lot of time and love into this state, and I'm really happy to see Senate Concurrent Resolution 4, and thank you for your support of it.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Sounds like a good resolution.
Okay. Yeah. Seeing none, thank you very much. That's all that signed up for to speak on SCR 4. If there's anyone else, I see no one raising and leaping to the chair. With that, we will close our public hearing on SCR 4 and we'll open a work session on SCR 4.
Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
I'll move Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves Senate Concurrent Resolution 4 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation, or is it due adopt? I don't know which on this one.
I don't think it matters.
I don't think it does either.
I don't know.
Neither do I.
I vote aye.
Okay. Yeah. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Opus.
Aye.
Representative
Clintz?
Aye.
Representative Dinkelman?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Excused.
Representative Maurer?
Excused.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Chair Rogel?
Aye. Motion passes. Is there someone who would like to carry this?
I will Representative Krieger with.
I will if you want.
He is the one for.
Okay.
He is the
other winner of
the year.
Okay. I would have no problem with that.
So it would be appropriate to have a woodland. If he doesn't, I'd be happy to carry it. But
and so is Smith. So
I'm a woodland owner.
And she's a woodland as well.
Yeah.
Actually,
both of
them.
Yeah.
So we will check.
We're just not national of the year yet, but we're working on
that. Okay. We will work.
I think it'll be a long
we'll check on that one, and if not, it'll be
yeah.
Representative
Smith. It could be a national
paragraph. So, with that, we will close our work session on SCR 4, and we will open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 149A. With that, we'll have a short explanation, and Gary can come on up from DeGum.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 149A modifies statutes relating to mine reclamation. There is no subsequent referral on the bill, no revenue impact, and no fiscal impact.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Lynch. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industry. And I direct the Mine Land Regulation Reclamation Program, which is regulates the mining industry, and as well as, you may remember, the oil and gas industry in the state of Oregon. Senate Bill 149, the main purpose of it was to strengthen our enforcement capability in regards to the mining industry in the state of Oregon. I think it's particularly important to note the support we have on this bill. It includes the Oregon Aggregate, Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. We work with the Farm Bureau and the League of Women Voters to make sure they had no problems with the bill. We worked with the Defenders of Wildlife support the bill, ODOT, and I apologize, I'm forgetting a couple others who support the bill, but there is no opposition to the bill. At the same time, I will say it, to many who read it for the first time, it is confusing, and it's the reason for that confusion, and as you can, if you thumb through the bill on pages 9 and 12, you'll see some examples of it. We have developed a patchwork quilt of regulation in our statutes over time, and working with the AG's office and, frankly, legislative council, we've tried to make our statutes, which will lead and rule, which ultimately, if this bill passes, will allow us to change our rules, to make it much more clear what is the violation, what isn't, what are the penalties, what aren't. And So there are large architectural changes or housekeeping changes to this bill. The penalties, we believe, are clearer and more fair and will result in this. I have to say also, we have been fairly criticized in the last few years for regulate those who follow the rules, follow them well, whether they want to or not, but we have a few operators who don't follow the rules. We believe this bill will correct that situation dramatically, and if there aren't, and with that, I'll open it up to questions.
Any questions?
I have a question of Beth.
Okay.
You may not know. My guess is this came out unanimous out of the Senate.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Two no's.
Or four no's.
Yeah.
What was it?
Okay. 26-4.
Because I don't have one of those.
Right. And we don't know what the...
Who was the four no?
It was Senator Burdick, Johnson, Schrader, and Whitsitt.
That's an interesting
guess. That's a strange group.
Oh, my gosh. Didn't tell me a thing.
That's true. That's exactly what I got out of that.
Maybe they can say what the opposition was. Was there any discussion on the floor?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, I did talk to Senator Johnson. I believe her quote was, she loved me like a brother, but just had to vote no for some reason, and never did get the exact answer. But
sounds like
so it. That's all I know.
Doesn't
help at all.
I do have a question regarding the...
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The maximum punishment, and I am just looking quickly through the bill. What is the current fine, and does this increase it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, the current fine is basically negligible and requires the criminal penalty. It is a tool we've been unable to use because we have to go through the county to get that authority to even get, and they are the ones who assess the penalty. And frankly, many times they have, you know, more important things, at least in their mind, to do. This changes the penalty from what I think, in my recollection may not be perfect on this, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 to $1,000. This raises the criminal penalty fine to $10,000, clarifies that if it's willful and reckless, and those two tests have to be passed, then we can assess a fine of $10,000, which would sting.
Thanks for listening, Chair. Okay. It's $10,000 now.
If I may, Chair Roblin, Representative Boquist, our civil penalty fines are $10,000 a day. I was just going to go to the section.
Section 13, right?
Yeah, actually, section 13, subsection 4.
Criminal penalties, okay.
That is, I'm just going to section 13.
3 and 4 both outline fine amount more than $10,000.
Correct. That's new.
No, that's part of the existing law.
Oh, here we go. Civil penalties under section we've imposed. So that's actually section 14. Well, under section 13, there's existing law, and then it was added. No, that's
it's section 3.
This is the amendment.
Well, it's the amended version, the ingress version. So.
Yeah. So there was a $10,000 per day deal, but this new one is the. If you were to cause substantial harm to human health or environment while conducting, so it's more of the criminal punishment.
Well, that's new. Mr. Chair, and anyone who cares to listen,
okay.
The existing fine of $10,000 is for non-aggregate.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And that's
true.
Rare commodity that doesn't get. We don't have a lot of non-aggregate mines in this state.
Okay.
The new version is the $10,000 for the criminal penalty for aggregate mines.
Aggregate mine. Okay.
That's really not much difference.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question.
Okay. Representative Smith.
I just have a question on, maybe Beth can answer. What's ORS 517785 is repealed, it says, in Section 28. And I just wonder what that was. It doesn't say on that.
Last one, the whole bill says that we're going to also repeal ORS 517-785, and we were wondering what that was.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I'm not sure what that is. And to some degree, what I did is I trusted the AG's office on this one, and I think what you're seeing is a modification, and I don't have 785. Actually, I do have it handy. But those kind of, that's part of the housekeeping changes, I believe. 785.
Sure. And Beth has it now.
Gary? 785 is withdrawal of county ordinance approval.
Yes.
So they probably picked it up someplace else.
Okay.
That makes sense. Yeah. Except
the county group statement.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're unmandating.
Yeah.
We're unmandating.
That's right. We're unmandating. Okay. Any further questions?
I do have one further question. And notification to, because this would apply to existing permit holders, correct? It's not just for new permits.
Chair Roblin, Representative Dingfelder, again, this is part of the confusion. However, the strength of this bill is currently any permit written before 1999, we cannot change the permit conditions on, nor can we change the reclamation plan. This bill, in working with the industry, they recognize there are situations where we need that ability, and that this removes that clause that said we can only regulate post-99 permits. This gives us the authority to change conditions on pre-99 permits.
So my follow-up question is,
yes, please.
Do we be sending written or email notification to existing permit holders to let them know of this the statute change?
Chair Roblin, Representative Dingfelder, and we always do. There is a large education process because there are many changes here, and we will notify everybody. There's also going to be a significant rule writing exercise that goes on here. That rule writing exercise by the APA will require a technical advisory committee, and I have testified on the Senate side. That we will invite all stakeholders into that, including a number of permittees, both not only OCAPA members but non-OCAPA members, as well as other interest groups.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any further? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we're in a work session and other.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to move Senate Bill 149 to the floor with a due pass.
No, we had. I opened both at the same
time.
Representative Boquist has moved Senate Bill 149A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Okay. We'll do a roll call vote. We'll hopefully have votes here.
Representative.
I'm sure we do.
Excuse.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative McPherson, excused. Representative Maurer, excused.
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ogle?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. Motion passes.
Mr. Chair, given the fact it has broad support and no opposition from concrete aggregate defenders of wildlife, I'd like to place it, and it's a technical fix, I'd like to suggest we place it on the consent calendar.
Any disagreement? I agree with that.
I agree.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
We will close our public hearing and work session on 149A, Senate Bill.
Okay.
And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 883. We'll have a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 883 allows imposition of a civil penalty of up to $10,000 for violations of pesticide application, sale, or labeling laws resulting from gross negligence or willful misconduct. There is no subsequent referral, no revenue impact, and minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. We'll have Lisa Hansen from ODA.
Yes.
And Chris, did you want to comment?
You wouldn't be here for your own bill.
For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and with me I have Chris Kirby, the Administrator of our Pesticides Division. Chair Roble and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to visit with you about Senate Bill 883. This is an industry bill that they have brought forth in response to a very extensive investigation that our pesticides division conducted during the fall of 2006 and into the early part of 2007 in Malheur County. We had a situation where there was a misuse of pesticide on an onion crop. Ultimately, we issued, I believe it was 15 civil penalties to growers in that case. But in many cases, what we discovered was the actual economic gain that the individuals who misused this pesticide product had versus the civil penalty. There was no comparison. The economic gain was much, much more. We met with the industry as we worked through this with concerns about the adequacy of the authorities that we had in our pesticide program. And ultimately, the industry has brought this to you. This would allow for a civil penalty of up to $10,000 for gross negligence and willful misconduct. And it really brings this fine into equivalency with our other environmental programs, such as the CAFO program, the water quality program, and our fertilizer program that we administer within ODA. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions. And if you have technical questions about the program, I'm sure Chris would be happy to answer those.
Okay. Questions? Okay. No questions.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Actually, I do have a question, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Dinkler.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, I'm assuming that is this complaint-driven, or do you go out and do regular inspections? How did you find out that they were misapplying the pesticide for the onion growers?
In this case, and this was an unusual one, it actually was a tip from EPA. EPA had been in the region and was on a grower tour, and people were talking about what they had done, and somehow this was overheard in a conversation, and they called us, and we started into an investigation by pulling dealer records initially to look at what onion growers, in this case, had purchased the pesticide product in question, and from there began kind of down the tree to go back and look and test.
That artichoke.
Yeah, you peel the layers back on the onion, pardon the pun on this one,
yeah.
To get to the bottom of it. Typically, though, in our program, many of our investigations are complaint-driven.
Just a follow-up.
Yes.
We haven't had much discussion in this committee about the pesticide use reporting system, otherwise commonly known as the other PERS.
The baby PERS.
Baby PERS, yes. So how would this fit in with PERS as it's currently set up? I'm seeing a shaking of the head, so.
Do you want to respond?
No, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, under the law, anyone who uses a pesticide in the course of doing business is required to report those pesticides into the pesticide use reporting system. That said, this was an illegal use. Under the law, they would be required to report it. If they hadn't, those could be counted as additional violations of the pesticide law.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have Catherine Friedman from Polk County.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm very happy to be allowed to speak to you today. I represent...
Mention your name.
I'm sorry. You may call me Kay.
Oh, okay.
Kay Friedman. I live at 915 Reuben Boise Road in Dallas, and I live near Forest Land. I've lived there since 1969, and when I moved into the community, it was a farming community that was in transition. orchards and dairies were going out of business, and people were purchasing small farms for rural residential use, and some of the land was purchased by timber companies. We are in a situation now where timber land and small residences and farms are intermixed, and it has presented a problem for a number of the residents of the area. We seem to have had a number of problems from that stem from the passage of the Right to Farm, Right to Forest Bill, ORS 30.930 to 30.947, and that basically appears to legalize drift from forestry operations, unless there's no right of private action in the courts unless there's a death, the loss of the use of an organ, or a permanent disfigurement, as that's the serious injury defined by ORS 161.015. So quite a bit of damage can be done to crops, to livestock, and to health, with really no recourse on the part of the public. And at any rate, several environmental groups got together over the weekend. We just discovered Senate Bill 883 on Friday, and several groups got together, and we read the existing law and the and what this will change, and it looks like it puts a limit of $10,000 on criminal conduct with a pesticide. It takes away jail time, and it takes away any upper limits, and we're begging you, please, please don't pass this.
Questions?
Isn't the current limit 1,000 and we're just moving it to 10,000?
No, it's the limit for the first violation is 1,000, the second is 2,000, but after that there is no limit, and jail a year, up to a year in jail is possible for criminal misconduct, according to the law that is currently in effect. And that's, you know, that is a group of citizens reading the law. We didn't have a chance to talk to an attorney. And I want to say, I grew up at Walla Walla, and that whole valley is plowed up and planted to wheat every spring. And the whole valley gets sprayed every year, and we don't. I have never seen the problems that we are having in our neighborhood with much less pesticide use on forest land. At Walla Walla, there's native plants in unsprayed areas. Livestock is healthy. People don't complain of acute effects. I mean, everybody knows you may eventually, you know, get a cancer or something from enough exposure, but you don't have the health problems that we're seeing.
And we're just, if I might, we're going to have some other people up here who could put I think maybe the citizen read might not be quite accurate, but
we'll
check it out.
Yeah, if we're wrong, believe me, we would be very glad to hear it. And I've got a dozen phone calls to make as soon as I get home.
Okay.
So thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I mean, Kay's in my district. I mean, Kay, my read of this thing, just so you know, is it's 1,000% increase in the present fine.
Right, and not changing anything.
It doesn't change the criminal code at all. There's no reference here to it, and the good representative here is digging through the book as we see. So
okay, so you think we've just misread the bill? We've become paranoid. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So was Nixon, and he had reason to be paranoid.
A good conspiracy theory never hurts anyone.
Okay. Well, I hope that we have nothing to worry about.
We'll ask some questions and see if that's the case.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.
With that, Terry Witt and Katie Fast.
Is 634-900. Okay, let us change it all.
As I read the bill, the thing about a simple penalty.
authorized to submit
comments. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and also the drafter of Senate Bill 883. Passing out some testimony, which I think covers the kind of the full bill from start to finish, but I'd like to clarify the record if I could with regard to some of the questions that were raised by the previous testifier. This bill only deals with the civil penalty authority of ODA. It does not deal with any criminal statutes whatsoever, and it does in fact give the department the ability to fine an individual for willful misconduct up to $10,000 per incident. Deputy Director Hansen talked about, there were fines levied in Malheur County. The largest fine levied for multiple count violations was just a little under $16,000. Had this statute been in effect, that fine for that multiple count individual would have been close to $100,000. And that would have made the penalty exceed the benefit or the gain that they would have derived from using the material illegally. It does not in any way, shape, or form give the farmer or the forester, whoever is using the chemical, any kind of escape from punishment for criminal penalty, if there is any, so it does not change that statute whatsoever. I'd also like to just make a brief comment, if I could, regarding the right to farm and forest. That statute does in no way absolve an applicator from liability for material that drifts off of target. They are responsible for that, and it is a violation of the 634 statutes. It's a prohibited act to use a material in exception to the label. And if the label says do not drift or do not contact persons and they do, it is a violation of the label and could be subject to civil penalties issued by the department. So right to farm and forest does not give a farmer the right to spray another individual or to damage property off of their private property. The other thing that I would like to add, Mr. Chair, is one of the questions that came up repeatedly was, will this bill be retroactive? In other words, could the department go back and issue larger penalties against the Malheur County onion growers? And the answer is no. The bill has an emergency clause, which means it would go into effect upon signing so that it could be effective for the remainder of the 2007 growing season, but it will not be retroactive. Be glad to answer any questions. This bill is supported by every natural resource group in the state of Oregon.
Any questions? Let's have Katie go first.
For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I think it's unfortunate that we're bringing 883 forward today due to the situation in Malheur County, but it's the essential nature of these agricultural products to Oregon's industry, and our endorsement of their legal and on-label use is why the bill is being brought forward and put forward for your consideration. It does bring the penalty authority up to $10,000 for willful misconduct, gross negligence, which is in line, as you've heard, with some of the other regulatory statutes that ODA administers, the water quality and the fertilizer, to name two. I'd just like to also add on the record that we're very grateful for the work that the Department of Agriculture did in the Malheur County onion case, and thankful for the market assurance testing that they did for all growers in that area. There was a potential for the onion market for the entire state of Oregon to be disrupted due to the acts of a few. And the market assurance testing and then putting people on the ground in Malheur County kept that market stable and also ensured consumer protections for the health issues as well. So we're very grateful for the work that they did, and we're happy to ask for this increased penalty authority for the department. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you. I have a question. I just want to make sure I'm reading this right, whoever wants to answer it. The removal on subsections 2A and B, so which currently limits the penalty that it can't be issued, if I'm reading this right, after 30 days after notice of violation, not to exceed 30 days after notice of violation. So that removes that, so there's no longer a time limit. Is that correct, the way I'm reading this?
I'm not, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I'm not aware of that.
Well, under Section 1,
I don't have
subsection
bill
3, okay, it removes two sentences that are currently in law,
okay.
Subsection A and B, which says a civil penalty may not be imposed under blah, 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 and then the director in every case shall prescribe a reasonable time for elimination of a violation. It takes out all of that language. So I'm assuming what that means is there's no sort of statute of limitations about issuance of a violation. Am I reading that correctly?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Right.
The main reason for that, Representative Dingfelder, is I think if you look at the Malheur case, for example, the investigation is an ongoing investigation that's going to cover some 6 months by the time it's done. And so we want to make sure that, you know, these penalties, if they are truly warranted, can go through regardless of the time that elapses for the investigation.
All right, thank you for that clarification.
And I guess the question that I would have, Representative Smith and I were talking, this applies to any kind of misuse, misapplication by anybody who sprays, including the state of Oregon, if they were to use the wrong pesticide inappropriately?
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, that is correct. The bar for a willful misuse or gross negligence is fairly high. I mean, it's not something where if somebody makes a mistake, they read the label wrong and they use a product incorrectly. That's not where we want to use this $10,000 penalty. But you're correct. It would apply to any licensed applicator. It would also apply to an unlicensed applicator. If you had a homeowner that went and somehow obtained a restricted use chemical and knew that what he was doing was against the law and did some egregious act with it, that homeowner could be subject to the same civil penalty.
The Oregon Golf Course Superintendents Association, they're not really part of the natural resource community, but they support the bill, I hear. So that's good. That's not a question. They may think they are. I don't know.
Chair Roland and Representative Clem, golf course greens are probably the most heavily sprayed piece of property in the country.
Yeah, I know. If only they would have left it farmland.
Record, I don't play golf.
I don't know how to get rid of mold.
That's why they tell you not to clean your golf balls by licking them.
How about this one? I never thought of that.
You learn a lot
of
useful
things.
Washers in
that body wash, though. What are you supposed to do?
Just spit it. I want you to know that's not a rural thing.
it was just a Coos Bay thing, apparently. Kentucky.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Any further questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much. That is all the people who were listed on this bill. Is there anyone else here who came that would like to testify on Senate Bill 883? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 883, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 883. So,
Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 883 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith has moved Senate Bill 883 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Clem.
Just 2 points. A, I'm just very pleased that the community's brought this. It really helps protect those of us who use pesticides legally when we police ourselves and, you know, nail people who give us a black eye. And then the other piece was just to declare a potential conflict of interest because we do apply pesticides in my orchard. And hopefully no one ever does it in a gross negligence or willful misconduct manner. But technically, I could lose financially if somebody was a bad egg.
Are you a golfer?
You lick golf balls.
No comment.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Representative Maurer.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Oakley.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Chair Roblin.
Aye. Motion passes. Thank you all. And we will close our work session on Senate Bill 883. Oh, Carrier. I'm sorry. Open a work session back on 883.
That is, I don't care. Representative Smith.
If you want me to, I'll be glad.
Okay, well, I'll find Representative Smith.
And then I'd like to go ahead and.
And I'll close the work session on 883.
Make a motion that we'd be allowed to vote on those other.
Okay.
That we did.
Yeah. Representative Smith has made a motion that we suspend the rules and allow Representative McPherson, Representative Maurer, Representative.
I think I missed one.
Well, you didn't.
We'll go Senate current resolution 4 first, and that would be Dingfelder to vote on Senate.
I was here for all the votes.
Just the two. Okay.
Okay.
Representative Maurer and.
Aye.
And McPherson.
Aye.
Okay. So, did I open a work session?
No.
I'll hold it. Hold it then. I need to open a work session on Senate concurrent resolution 4. Now we can take your votes.
Okay. Aye.
Aye.
And okay.
Okay.
So we'll close the work session on SCR4. We're going to open a work session on SB 149A.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we suspend the rules and allow whoever didn't vote on SB 149A to vote.
Representative Smith has moved that we suspend the rules. Does anybody disagree? Seeing none.
Vote.
Those people who did not vote on Senate Bill 149A may now do so. Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
We will close our work session on Senate Bill 149A. Thank you. We have a little bit of time before we have a session at 10, so we might as well get some hearing to get it going, and then.
Okay.
Pardon?
10? 4. We already did the 10 o'clock one.
I mean, 10 o'clock. We have 4 o'clock, so we have about 10 minutes. We'll open a. Public hearing on Senate Bill 238A, so we can get some stuff on the record. And we'll begin with a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 238A increases the maximum permissible license fees for certain weighing and measuring devices. There is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and you should have a fiscal statement attached to your staff measure summary.
And with that, we'll have Lisa Henson, Russ. I'm not going to say that.
This is where.
And Jim Welch. Might as well all come up at the same time.
I've never heard one like this. I actually heard the same bill. It was broken down differently.
For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 238A is another of the agency's fee bills. This is actually the last fee bill I will have to talk to you about this session that we've brought forth. This bill supports our weights and measures program, and for those of you who aren't familiar with it, our weights and measures program basically regulates anything, scales, gas dispensers. We even check the lottery balls to make sure that they are the accurate weight so that nobody has an advantage with any of those.
Yeah, this is the daily.
Kind of falls.
This bill significantly increases the license fees that are charged in our weights and measures program. We've spent over a year working with the industry to come up with a way to allocate the fees. We've looked at the time it takes for the different device types to do the inspections, and the fees have been allocated accordingly. So you don't see an across-the-board percentage increase to each one of the device types. It's different by device type based on the work effort that goes into those inspections. In addition, early in the session, the industry had a companion bill that was a House bill that assumed general fund into the program. When the co-chair's budget came out, there was no general fund in the weights and measures program. It assumed a fully funded program with fees. So during the Senate hearings, this bill was amended at the request of the industry that once we get to a point that the program is fully funded for 5 years following that, there's a 2% inflation factor built into these fee increases to give them some certainty of what their fees will be through 2015. And we believe that this addresses the concerns that they had brought forward and they had supported it on the Senate side as well. And so with that, I'm happy to talk about any specifics. Russ can talk about specifics. We've provided you written testimony as well as a fee schedule for the next several years to show you what those fees will look like.
Any questions at this time?
At the end, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Oh, I do have one question.
Okay.
How much does the lottery pay?
For their weights and measures.
Chair Roblin, Representative Boquist, the lottery pays. It's a special request test, and they pay on an hourly rate for our metrologists to calibrate those balls. And the hourly rate right now is $75 an hour.
You need to identify yourself
for the record.
Pardon me? You need to identify yourself.
Right.
Chair Roblin, for the record, my name is Russ Wyckoff, the Administrator for the Weights and Measures Division.
Thank you. Well, let's go right ahead and have Jim.
Chair Roblin and committee members, I'm Jim Welsh, representing the cattlemen. And we have, of course, been working, not myself, but others of members of our association working with the department on this. And, yes, we would have liked to have seen support coming from the certainly from Ways and Means, but if that's not going to be there, we have to have the program, and so we're supportive. And we realize the kind of work that we've seen behind this and working with the department that is very conscious of you know, the considerations, not only for the cattlemen, but for the certainly for the grocery industry and others, that they took into consideration, I think, many things here. And I think we have something that is as close as we can get. And, yes, there is going to be a couple big bumps to begin with here, but then it all seems to smooth out a lot more as we get down for 6 years. So we support this and sure appreciate working with the department on this, too. Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Plum?
I have one question. You think we'd move this, though, if I don't ask any questions?
No.
Just a point of curiosity, I think, for you, sir. If you know, when we pull our big fruit trucks onto a big weight system at our co-op, they, you know, weigh it, and then later in the day, they'll do a dry weight early in the morning, and then they'll do one as you bring the fruit through. They always have you get out of the truck, and I wondered why. As long as I'm in the truck at the beginning and the end, why do I have to get out every time? But the lady in the booth always makes me get out of the truck.
You wait too much.
But I was in it before. Come on.
Chair Roblin.
I go to the bathroom and lose weight.
Representative Quinn, I think that's a policy at the individual location is doing the weighing. The whole idea there is to ensure that it's consistent. You're either in the truck at each weighing or you're out of the truck at each weighing. So different locations will require one or the other. The crucial point is you don't be in the truck for one way and out for the other.
Yeah, that I got, but just feed me a piece of pie during the time I'm out of the truck so I won't complain about it.
Drinking all
the
water.
This isn't a policy with the division. It's a local policy at that location.
It's drinking all that water. That's the bad part. Representative Dingfelder?
I was curious.
Did you have a question?
Okay. I had a question regarding the under section, let me make sure I'm looking at section 1, subsection 2. And you talk about the 2% increase annually between 2011 and 2016. First of all, can you talk about, I guess, in the big picture, why fees, they haven't been increased in 15 years. So why did you wait so long, number one? Two is, can you talk about that 2% adjustment, if that's CPI or how you came up with that? And then it stops 2016.
Chair Roblin, Representative Dingfelder. Traditionally, the agency has maintained fund balance for many of its other funded programs. And so we would raise fees up to the statutory caps over time, kind of live off the fund balances, and then once we hit a certain point, need to come back. That's exactly what happened here, except for on the downhill side, it's gone much faster than we initially had anticipated. I think one of the lessons we've learned over the last couple of years when we have brought fees forward where we've had these big spans of time in between the fee increases is it's better if we do them on a more frequent basis with smaller amounts. And I think that is one of the things that we've talked about internally into the future is to have more frequent increases with smaller amounts. Lessons learned. I mean, it has just been a traditional practice in the agency, and that's how we've done it. And then your second question had to do with the 2% inflation indicator. that was a number that basically in discussion with the industry they were comfortable living with. We said we can live with it. We're willing to continue to look at the program, look at efficiencies into the future, look at different ways of doing the inspection, and we feel like it will give us adequate funding longer term as long as we continue to look at the programs and make modifications to meet the needs of the industry over time.
So just to follow up, so in 2016 then, so this basically caps out at 2016 and then you'd have to come back and ask for an adjustment again, is that correct?
Chair Roblin, representing Felder, you are correct. We will be back visiting with you again at that time to do something different with these fees.
Thank you for that clarification.
Any other questions?
I do have a question.
Representative McPherson.
I want to make sure I'm understanding this. I recall we had a bill, a House bill up earlier, and what I think has happened, if I'm absorbing this right, is that that would have had a sharing between the general fund and the licensees, and the effect of this bill, which is really a substitute, which is that all the costs of the through the licensing process, the fees will then be borne by those who operate the equipment. Is that right?
Chair Roblin, Representative McPherson, you're correct. The industry came, the ODA had an agency bill that was supported in the governor's recommended budget, Senate Bill 238, that fully funded the program with fees. And at the same time, the industry, the grocers, had brought forth a companion bill that was part fees, part general fund. And the general fund was not made available in the co-chair's budget for this program.
Very good. That's what I needed to know.
Okay. And my only question, we heard from Cattleman, the other people who really are hit by this would be grocers because they have more scales or not. And are those people? Oh, okay.
Mr.
He wasn't signed up.
In addition to the grocers, you've got Farm Bureau truckers, propane, and gas retailers before.
Right. So have you talked with some of those people as well?
Some of them.
As to whether they are in agreement with this? Because there's another issue that's here that I've talked to most of our members about, and that's the removal of the Ways and Means subsequent referral, which I think we'd like to do. But I like to feel comfortable that everybody is on board with this, and that's where they want it to go. So,
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, ODA worked with the Grocers Association, the Northwest Food Processors Association, the Cattlemen's Association, the petroleum dealers, the LPG,
propane, gasoline.
So it was a broad work group of people who license weighing and measuring devices within ODA.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association. We did work with the department to come back with a revised draft of this bill in the Senate once we were not able to get the general fund appropriation. The amendment that we put in on the Senate was an effort to bring consensus within the industry to accept the fee increase with the 2% cap in an agreement to come back and reevaluate the program at the date that Representative Dingfelder suggested in the bill. And so although it was not our first choice, we did come to a consensus on 238 and support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we may be out of time and come back to this later, but I mean, the department listed a whole bunch of people who were part of the work group, and I guess my question is are those all still on board, or are they now jumping ship?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boquist, we had talked to all of those members of the work group, and they were willing to go along with the amendments that we had drafted on the Senate side, and I have not heard that they would oppose the bill since then, and they did not oppose it in the Senate side. But we communicated once we did not weren't able to get the general fund. We came up with this idea of being able to, and again, working with our retailers in a mechanism that doesn't, you know, wait 15 years and you know, raise fees 85%. We don't want to get in that situation again. We went through this last session with the Food Safety Division. It's the same scheme where we give them the ability to raise that at least 2% per biennium and be able to come back and evaluate that. That's more something that our retailers can stomach versus this long period of time where they hit us with a huge increase. And so even though this is hard to stomach, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think it's something we can live with, and we do support a fully funded program, and it's vital to you know, consumer protection.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. We are late, so I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 238A, and we will carry over Senate Bill 238A to Thursday on a work session. So you can have, if you want to get a hold of anybody and check before then, we will do it to them. Thank you for that, and we're going to close the committee meeting on Agricultural Resources.